Sure, my name is Paul Shaw. I'm a famous science fiction writer. But I'm not as famous as a science fiction writer who is about to speak to you and maybe thank you for a long talk. And Harry Harrison. Actually, this is a double plus because I'm not here to introduce Harry. I'm here to introduce the man who's going to introduce Harry. He knows much more about him than any other living person. And the man I'm talking about is Professor Liam Silver of the Illinois Institute of Technology. He's with Harry for a long, long time on different projects. Possibly one of the best known mythologists of their time is Caveman and Spaceman. And another very good one, but one of my favorites, Stonehenge, is called Where the Man is Died. Liam is going to take over from me and give you a little talk on Harry. So I get out of the way. Thank you. Your guest of honor at this 48th World Science Fiction Convention is Harry Harrison. During his 40 years as a working SF writer, he has been honored in every local and regional town known to fame in every hidden corner of the globe. At long last, he had nowhere else to go but here, to the big wall terrestrial planetary. The importance of your invitation to Harry, you may judge by the turnout of his entire menage. His good wife Jim Harrison, son Todd, Myra, his daughter, plus a cohort of loyal collaterals. Not to spoil the dignity of this formal occasion, I shall do my best as a university professor to keep you from laughing for the next 9 or 10 minutes. When I first met Harry, the family consisted only of Joe and Todd in his grave. Place, Lower Manhattan. Time, the spring of 1956. I was then a graduate student of anthropology at Columbia University, and by chance moved into the apartment next door to the Harrisons. Betrayed by that mysterious brand marked on our foreheads, secret sign visible only to fellow fans, Harry and I instantly got to talking about our favorite subject. In the summer of that year, Harry and Jim packed up baby Todd and what few possessions would fit into a tiny second-hand Ford Anglia and drove off to some remote village in rural Mexico. The first of many such places, left out of Bartholomew's atlas of modern geography, into which Harrison's had repeated to vanish. Here it was that Harry began work on his first novel, Death World, and it appeared in his family under the legendary editorship of John W. Campbell, Jr., Harry being the last of the SF giants cultivated by Campbell on the magazine you know as Analog. Still was that stately title of old, astounding science fiction. Its logo changed just as Death World reached its final stone. But Harry went on from there, evolving his own concept of SF out of the Campbellian forcing bed. At that point, Astounding's mission was complete. Definitive magazine had produced, in the end, a writer who redefined the field and who continues to reshape it. What could not be carried to Mexico with Jim away, including the Harrison poster? That toaster still is working in my kitchen 34 years later. Two of those years, there it was at breakfast. Little touch of pattern in the morning. I now see a devilish plot calculated to keep my attention fixed on his difference, which I did, in following Eric's career right up to the present moment of his apotheosis. And so you will find the life and work of Harry Harrison traced in my new book on the subject, given the wonderfully convincing title, Harry Harrison. It was published in Twain's United States Authors series, a fact which may either please or displease you, depending on how jealously you guard fandom against invasion of the academic body snatchers. Whatever, my publisher takes a view that Harry Harrison belongs to American Letters at large, not in the limited SF. And with the Western Eden trilogy, he has in fact reached far beyond the bounds of genre readership. His first failed move in that direction, I like to think of as a comedy of juxtaposition. The Book of the Month Club had selected his Captive Universe for April 1969. And although I'm praised highly by Gilbert Hyde for its literary quality, it lost out in sales to the alternate selection by about 50,001. It's done a lot of habit. The alternate to Captive Universe was that humongous artifact of mainstream culture, The Godfather by Mario Puzo. As if you didn't know, this is the same Godfather turned into Marlon Brando and would be parts on into on-ending TV reruns. Well, I have an evil dream. I dream Eric Zero, certainly Jim McGriz of the Radicals, will make it to the screen in an equally big way, and the title I favor is The Stainless Steel Mask Revenge. There is a good chance this may happen, although much likely to be filmed as a stainless steel mask draft. But I wonder how the filmmakers will handle Slippery Jim's favorite language. As Harry was fond of saying, the rap speaks Esperanto like a native. So does Harry himself, by the way. He first studied it while serving as a technical specialist in the U.S. Army Airport during WW2. And he is now finally placed in the Universal Esperanto Association, as it is possible to get, having been elected one of its 8 honorary patrons, a select group drawn from the world's most distinguished scientists and linguists. Harry's interest in the Esperanto movement is basic to his anti-war stance, and it was by reflecting on his military service that he came to write Bill, the Galactic Hero. You know this comedy classic as a madcap adventure set in the same future. But French critics, who find profundity in the most unlikely places, even in Jerry Lewis movies, place it on a philosophical par with Joseph Heller's Catch 22, classic anti-war novel of our time. What Harry actually did in his service is also of interest, and in a way as well as the whole of his later career. He was a power-operated computer gunsight specialist, and he was working with the Sperry Mark I computer, a top-secret device that was a secret behind Gordon Brown's name as well. The Sperry was a positively prehistoric clockwork mechanism of miniature rods and cocks. But learning how to repair and maintain it, Harry gained his basic knowledge of computers, whose latest developments in the realm of electrical science need tennis following Ms. Navaday. The sixth grade also departed in the area of keen interest in everything technical and scientific, which reveals itself in the research he undertakes before writing. Eric always does his homework. For that reason, you also often hear him express impatience with fantasy and occult SF. But to take this work as hard-shelled SF and then go ahead is to overlook its extreme versatility and range. Indeed, there's nobody else like him for the sheer variety of stuff he produces, one novelty after another. As a result, critics have a hard time tracking him. And academic critics, who just love to patronize the formula writer, have quite simply solved the problem by ignoring him. If I have not, it's because I have a Harrison Texter to contemplate every morning. He pops up uniform pieces of toast, and that gets me to thinking just how varied and non-uniform are the products of the Harrison brain. For contrast, I've already mentioned his literary masterpiece, Happy Universe, almost in the same breath as the juvenile Roundups. There's also his comic masterpiece, The Technicolor Time Machine, and the notice on the Tunnels in the Deeps, Parallel World novel. Yet the same theme animates Rebels in Time, with seriousness of purpose, matched only by his novel social commentary, Make Room, Make Room. Terry never fails to entertain, even in his high didactic mode. These are a few choice examples from Harrison's more than 30 novels done over the 40 years of his productive life. And this is not to mention his uncounted short stories, nor his voluminous work as a critical anthologist, nor his organizational work on behalf of both fandom and other professionals, as in his family and world SF. His reputation, however, must rest with his novels. And the main thing about them is they are all different. Except for sequel runs like the Death World series, each one has its own stylistic music, attuned to its rhetorical purpose. And this, again, Harry Harrison is troublesomely unique. And always there is increasing polish and control, such mastery of the craft, leading on to the West of Eden trilogy, that I am left to wonder what new and better thing he next will do. If he is to do it, however, he counts on readers like yourselves to keep up with him. And so, I give you that still growing giant of SF, Harry Harrison.
Hero wash. as ranger. Like the possessor of wit and charm. These are some words that describe Annie Harrison. Troublemaker, lover of strong drinks and good company, maker of other jokes, more words than you can use without really capturing the complete personality of our guest. Words can only be a poor approximation. I believe words to the one who handles them best. Our guest of honor, Mr. Annie Harrison.
Thank you for it. Overwhelmed is the underwhelming of one word. Oh my God. I knew why. Everyone like to buy a second-hand watch? Because he just come here to get drunk and see decaying authors decay in front of him. You know, I don't think I should lie. But, true, I'd like to say very much thank you for having me. It's, maybe, what rewards authors get besides hot little kitties from overdrinking? Think of money, you have to have a place to stay alive. You're fantasizing on what your books are, you don't need those. You're fantasizing on what your books are. But as an ex-former card-carrying fan, I do appreciate the fact that there's one thing that fans are so far away that is literally beyond money. I get to know anyone who bought a guest of ownership. Well, I mean, this is a cigarette or something. Hell's my mom. I mean, some of you like a guest of honor at a queer time, you know, Monkey Street in Singapore, or something, or something. But it's not worth knowing. We all here know how they work. Fans spend years and years and years with their money, the city's money, the government's money, putting together a con, bribing folks to get it, and everything, and do the convention. And some of the world in the line there, they say, hey, we get a guest of honor. Who haven't they had with it? Or if they're honest, upright, intelligent Dutchmen, they say, who is it neglected? Who is it? A voice crying a lot into this. Get me. They got me. But I'm missing overjoyed as well. And I'm dear friend Leon said, I'm an internationalist. I left the United States for reasons in the moment. And I live in a number of countries. I speak very badly a number of languages. And my dear friend Carol Toll once told me we're in Finland. And Carol is Dutch, which means that his native language is German. He speaks very good, perfect English and French and Italian, and a little bit of Deutsch, and some Spanish, you know. And he was so annoyed at being in Helsinki. I don't speak anything to anybody. Very few people speak Finnish, you know, Finns don't speak Finnish. And the second language there is Swedish. I was home in the cat bar in Danish, which seems to be possible to me. This language is fairly close. And I said, well, we started talking about writing, I said, I'm an American writer. No, you're not. I thought, I write books, publishers, and I don't care what you maybe you're not a writer, you're a European man. And I didn't ask for a compliment, it's a compliment you might call it. The EEC has its problems. But he said, I did, and I do like to think of myself as being the only European citizen in the world. So to me, the greatest pleasure was being invited to this particular convention. We had one small commission, the High Con, which I'm happy to attend. But if you leave the High Con aside for a minute, the World Con, that great, which is the American World Con, 70 people in New York City in 1938, World Con. Every night has been a problematic. This is a World Con. All the other World Cons, we all know, everybody in the days and years and months of every World Con have been in English-speaking countries. If you speak Western, speak English, yes. In Sweden country too. And I understand that when I had five hours of sun, I'd be very close to any Sweden country. But that's probably the case. I thought you were for a holiday in the Sweden country, you know, no problem. I'm the other side here. And when I was asked to come to visit the convention at Eskimo and share it with Marion Weiner and my very good German friend, oh, this is pretty great, this is good stuff. And I was like, oh, we all came because Eric Dutch, you were invited, you came because you liked to come here, and welcome to Holland. I hope you're enjoying yourself. I am certain things about the country. Available elsewhere. But let me come down, guess the last speech. I should really leave the voting thousands. We understand everything I want to say anyway. Outline my history. But we had a few points I just skip over them. Usually conventions give a talk, yeah, tell dirty jokes, a lot of funny things that happen in the break time. But I can take a clue to my old and good friend Brian Aldiss, who wrote a very similar, fascinating book called Bear My Heart, W.B. Smith. By the love. And in this book, just anecdotal, trying to give the structure to show where I come from, how he worked, what happened to his life, many ways together. And he gave a talk in Birmingham recently. They were literally part of 45 words, 182 words. And Pete West was saying he really enjoyed what Brian did. You know, in the book and his talk, attempted to tell where it comes from, what shapes are, what makes a letter, where it makes a letter, how what he's done. Leonard Mott is the second question going to his jail. The first, of course, is, where did you get your pretty good ideas from? Well, I had to answer that. Plotto was in a program, a computer program. Runs an IBM on Mac, but you know what your plot idea is. Wow, you know, get to the kind of. But after that, that is the question. This is why I had another question. I say, you know, when inadvertently it's your writer, they say, oh, that's my thing, I've done it on before. And what made you write? They never heard of me. Where she's out with me and say, Bill Shakespeare. Where do you get great ideas from? Or how do you come out of it? And that is, what kind of human being are you? Where did you come from? Because writers are born, then made, not the other way around. And as Brian said in Blurring My Heart, it's not too hard to write a book and sell it. Very hard to keep on doing it year after year. And even harder to see what stay in print. And many books are very go on, child of your heart. And I don't know where do I come from? I said, hey, look around. Yeah, I said, oh, mine, Brian, hopefully, Hersey Margaret is all right. I'm see if it's not legally okay. Say, that's how I had a child. This means all science fiction fans are nasty writers. All science fiction fans have not happy child. Helps to read a lot. Helps me nearsighted old fan the way it lasts. It helps me short old fan the shorter fan than anybody else. So that's a natural thing. Nearsighted, short fan in my class. I read a lot, 15, 20 books a week. I learned to walk or read to the library, walk downstairs, occasionally look sideways in the street. The library's 15 minutes open, and when you can read. And, well, like everyone in the audience, I have a very happy child, but that's not important to shape your life. And even greater shape, there's the military. My generation we call the drafting generation. War was on American wisdom. You can't miss it for 18 or even 16, but no one wanted to do this. Americans hate war, basically. Maybe it's changed a bit between people. We have a civilian army. And they do with a draft. You hung around school, you hung around school, graduating your 18. And we can see it coming up. We can see every graduating class ahead of us. That's the moral of the dream. And it's 24 times Mississippi. It's quiet, you know. The U.S. Army puts all this establishment of training in the south, where it's hot and warm and miserable. And it's heckless in the north, where it's very cold and miserable. Nothing in between. And then the fourth time I take basic training, I step off from school and learn my computer. And that's ultimately important. Because if you live, that's the basic thing. And it's nice to have had in your past. Basic training is an invention of military, which as you all know, I rather like very much. And I think church nation is the United States, you have a problem with Iraq. But you know Iraq. Military basic training is designed only one thing, destroy. It's very easy to do. They only destroy your training when it's cheaper than having your expensive flight and say your excessive trip over somewhere and kill a disease or your body. Yeah. You do the basic training, that helps you stay alive. Get through the war years, then you're back in civilian life. And then the problems come. What do you learn in military? You go lie here all day long. I can call myself. You learn to curse, to drink, to chase your words. That's what military education is about. It's everywhere, those little people are flying machines or something like that. You're holding the military to avoid work as long as possible. To say you're going to go out, get married, not go out after girls. That's the answer. All the things you say to the military. And we'll skip that. You know, one of the more important part. Having learned as a child, you should do something resembling an adult in the military. It's not true. No one is an adult in the military. There's a military. It's a whole other way of life. It's like being in prison. And people read this about prisoners volunteering for another term. They protect them. That's the Army and not fighting. I was in the Air Force. They did it on purpose. If I come in the Army, I get killed. There's a war on. And I go, people in the Navy are a great thing with 1 foot walls. See a hole they go down, 1,000 miles from the river. Not the Navy. I'll go to the Air Force. Or the Air Force. I want to go to infantry. There are a lot of guys in the shoot after we're trying to kill Americans. So I don't know, I had a native talent for survival. But I gave money. I had a job earned $80 a week, adding boxes. Boxes of medicine. I actually went to school and got a license to repair aircraft instruments. Never saw me in my entire life, of course, but that got me in the Army, which was the old Army Air Corps in those days. It got me to death inside. And even in the Second World War, it was, I think, 330 men in the Army, everyone in the air. Now it's over 2,000, I'm sure, 3,000, the technology problem. It's been a very boring 4 years, most of the time in Texas. We were permanent party, they call the AOT, the Army Occupation of Texas. Mostly Yankees in the North. And I taught gunnery. Man, I'm in gunnery school. Is there anything worse to do than teach people to kill people? And they got a shit part of my life. I stood there, from the position, out for the machine gun, quick big bullet, throw 5 miles, got a wife and solid metal, armor, prison bullet. That was all over. Peace declared. We won the war. Back in New York, so speaking of smart like New York, right? Let us see it now, I'm going to read a book and preparing for a career. And it was good or bad. I always liked to draw and I always liked to write. And I had this chance. Another education review and tracking it by 4 years in Texas. And I jumped one way and I spent the next month or 3 years as a commercial artist. Started reading, got into comics. For you comic friend, I'll have you know I dropped big names. Went to art school with Hollywood and I broke it together with partners. Frank Rossetti was in the next studio with us. These are all names that he was not through. Remember him going the way of the Black Page in the program. But I did that. And it's in New York. And it's very interesting. By my hindsight, I don't get it. A, the visual sense of my books. I see what's there's a picture of you. That's what we had out of the this whole thing on stage. And New York then was a hotbed of science fiction. Mind you, basically, like science fiction used to be a labor of love. I don't know what it is right now. I have my doubts about it. You know? I think perhaps it's not dying dead, but I have a morbid attitude. But everyone was in New York. They weren't in New York. They came through New York. So I got to know a lot of impoverished guys who had no money at all, who were people I knew and respected. I was like, I'm 7. One of the earliest things I did in my life, age of 12 or 13, was help San Marcos on the Green Science Fiction League. And first thing we did was throw a little score out. Thank you. And I got to work with the Green Science Fiction League and help send a little score from San Marcos. Well, I guess we can. That's how I helped send Tom Byron friend years later in Ireland. I helped Tom Irish friend. And we were going to Green Science Fiction League. One year, a schism, two fanzines, and the treasure ran away with money. That's what happened once. And I didn't stay here for every film, and we found a fish. And Wilmot or a lot of us over, we found a fish, and we had a pretty boring panel on how to be a fan. You know, you have to tell them you're a fan. Read some fish and drink Coca-Cola, you're a fan. You're a fan. You're a fan. But if you stand there, like Jimmy, they got very careful. Bored to death. And I got up and I said, wait, there's more fun. There's a joke in the fact that there's a sexuality, you know. And now with the chickling, there's other kind of sexuality. Wow. It's interesting world out there. And I said the same anecdote. And the sweet friend, no, it's not like that. No. And I have a family sitting in the organization, two magazines. And they left the San Diego, oh, Harry, he said, should have said, in here in San Diego, this is what we learned. A Finnish man had a schism, they broke out with two fanzines and a fish and a gold mine. So, oh, I can't say that at all, so I can say it's in the blood, it's fat, it isn't it, it happened. So, here I'm in New York with the pros. When I mean pros, I mean BNPs. We're all smoothly pros then, except for the four people that had science fiction. I mean, nobody earned a living writing science fiction other than John Campbell. He got $50 a week. You know, the office behind the stacks, behind all the paper, the second-hand magazines, was here to spend. But they were all there, all, either they work or the wives work, they borrow money from each other. And they do it now, I think about it. And it's like a roll call of, you know, in Moscow a few years ago, and met a Russian man, Misha, and when I was a very English word translator, I was sitting there late, like, waiting for something to arrive, and Fred Paul and I were sitting across from each other, and we were discussing who's one of the biggest records in science fiction. That's what I was going to do, you know. I won't tell you anymore, you make your own checklist. And Fred was like, no, that's a lot worse than she does. Or, no, the teeth don't come out all the time, they come out a while. Even the eye is glass, doesn't smell too bad. And Misha, Russian science fiction fan, going back and forth with the conversation, and he pulled me his hand, and he said, you're talking about my guns. I was there with the guns. And we had to go behind it, but God, the animals alive. There were seven heads alive. It was found by seven science fiction writers. I may get the name wrong now, but I know who was there. I think seven were Fletcher Pratt, Elspeth, Kent, Fred Paul, Judy Merrill, Cyril Conwood, and on from there. Freddie Grant was living there. One who didn't live there, like Tony Marshall, came through town, Ray Barrett would come through. Ed Hammond came to one of the left in the middle of the night. So for me, if you live in the Midwest, you see New York, and I was in the 50s, 40s, you leave very quickly. And to my great pleasure, John Campbell was there. And of course, I was in comics. And all the time I run comics, I'm working away with comics, of course, how to be artist. I listened to all this, and maybe 30 to start, the very first thing I ever wrote was an article for Writer's Digest. Tells you anything about it. You know, by hindsight, tells you something. This is an article entitled, How to Write for the Comics. Because it was a comic book illustrator. And I get these filthy, horrible scripts written by the publisher's daughter. Unbelievable! Everything wrong. 9 pages, 400 words. That must
This is not a publisher. So number one, it can page, the romance kind of, not romance kind of book. And when you think of the structures I'm talking about, that is just like you do one, when one's a panel, fills the dialogue, said, to her, she wants to say her money to have a financial cushion for her later life. And that illustration of a cushion, that would be a little bit getting in, and little things like nine panel page, and first panel, Agnes Cooper, they're all with it. And eight more panels, they will throw out the room, they're falling in the energy. Falling. And the dialogue, oh my darling, my precious darling, come to me, my bosom, hold it out of my door. Yes, we press me to the bed. Oh. And the last panel, I had the kitchen. And the dialogue was like that. This is my greatest experience of my life. She's reaching out and taking a bag of soap off the shelf. Not a soap, on a box. It says, Harris Wood. We snuck our names into the story. But this is, you might imagine, a pretty modern life to make those drawing hands like that. Okay, how do I do comics? One of the ones you suggested was the stupidity of scriptwriting. There's still a lot of horrible, I hate comics. But artists are fantastic. People writing are absolutely warm. They type like a rookie. Unbelievable. And there were more comic ones. And the American airplane was climbing down with a permanent militia, climbing down on a tank. And Lyle agrees, pilot, hey, that you American shine. And tank commander, I'll get you, drop bastard. Well, really, what I'm going to tell you is you each other or something. So, as I say, it was a pretty disastrous life. But I did have to stay alive. At the same time, I knew it very good. So I was going to do the publishing. I heard a talk about writing. And I really should talk to it. But you learn a lot. It's where you learn a lot of things like narrative or thought. Moment. But I started illustrating science fiction magazines with a lot of Latin American going from name to name. I illustrated all the issues. I first illustrated a magazine called It Dies. And here's a magazine called World Beyond. And I have a consulate, high fever, hand machine. I couldn't grow up, I tried to tie it, I'm tied in a drone. I don't think that I was just getting one. Man, how much a shake for touching it won't matter. But I wrote a short story called Rock Dragon. And I wrote the name as a thing. Well, I couldn't grow this story. What should I do with it? He read it. Wow. It's pretty easy. I'm like, you know, I'm a writer. You know, I'm going to throw all my agents. And I think, Frank, give me this story. Third, not bad. I'm an anthology. Wow. This is great. 4 or 5 stories later, I was signing out about it. The sun was very high pitch, and I mentioned the latest thing to see around. Next story, so with another episode of John Campbell, I've written narrative books. And narrative books are writing advice in the old pulp magazine. And all the way, if you don't know, you should know if you want to write, you type on white paper, on one side only, double spaced. The first page of the story novel, the upper left hand corner, is a name and an address. That is a name. You want to check me out, you should sell this piece of crap. On the right hand side, in the old days, the word card, the county word, easily abused now. Found the word. Half another page, one half a page later, there's marking on like illustration size. Name a story by another name if you want. That goes on a story. That's the name of the story page. And then this one is a check. Then I pull this back around. You have to fill out how much space is to do a 6 line with type. And the theory. Little things that pulp soil. A narrative for what you want to do. All this sludge coming from some tracks and cracking the face of the engine, you know. You want to attract the other's attention. Somewhere, you know. As an end of the year, $5 bills. Anything. Look there. So you wrote a narrative for it. I wrote about 20 narrative folks. And one of them, oh man, that's a great book. It was something like a night character. First person. I was sitting behind the desk, a policeman burst through the door. Jimmy Green's trying to charge him in. And I wouldn't charge, I pressed the button. A fight comes safe.
for me, science for life? Yes, I like it. You read every word? Yes, I do. You enjoy Thomas Hardy? Yes, I do. Okay, take these manuscripts. Read a page or two. Anything happens, if you win, if you know that you, I know it's interesting, it's great as good. If you can touch your ear, any reaction at all other than disgust, put it aside for me to read. Nobody likes this. Just me. And she walked me to her. I next day, she said, I like the middle, she said. Yeah, she said, two points, yeah, I said. Yeah, also, yes, I told her me. She said, yes. Well, I said, where is it? She said, I read it in the morning. It was just that afternoon. I just said, it's spelled it right.
I couldn't work in New York.
administration for New Mexico for 3 or 4 years. New Mexico, I'd be very, very cheap. And I think that's the thing that United States football like in Mexico. So I'm going to work this out a lot. I finished a lot. Men's national tonight. The special men's national tonight. These are things. 2000. Where they start out. Rather and justify it and climax. I climbed up to a jail and I told you I was going to be like this. I'm not going to be like, I'm going to own my shit. Or I caught my own arm. Really good. $2,000 get paid. $75, $75 a salary. $75, $200 sometimes. I took my own arm and prospected out looking for uranium and rock for exit. I'm going to break the rule. I thought, oh, man. Because Captain Archer doesn't have more than that stuff. And goes back to one of mine. Took a photo of a friend of mine. I was working with my old field jacket. Aren't you not wearing that? I saw the photograph. I'm going to get this story. But especially when you're living here, having been commercialized, I was commercialized, but the story's on the right. I don't know what it means, because science fiction is the way the action was, as far as I was concerned. Having saw some stories, and it's a science fiction magazine, I wanted to be something. My wife, my very generous teacher, said, I said, let's go to Mexico. Now, they had a new teacher. Just like most of us would say. My friend said, I'm saying it, my little baby, boom, boom. And after that, we sold our air conditioner. I know New York is really happy. He sold the air conditioner. That's it. Can't remember when I said, ah. Took us to Mexico and literally drove to the round of road. We didn't know where to go. They took it out. And the baby ended one day. Turned back, we'll come down near Quapa, or else it's near Marquardt, south of Mexico City. And he stayed about a year, and I worked for the Death Row, and it was a whole story. And we decided to leave about 2 or 3 weeks. A, don't work here, what can you do? I'm full time, it was $5 a month. The kid was $20 a year, and I traveled all the time, working all the time, I was being clean all the time. And it was boring, not many friends there. And then Todd Hill, at that time, Malay was the family in Mexico. And so much so that the doctor recognized by the symptoms, what was said on the screen, the figure, ah, all these were. Several phone, and New York retained a cure of that, nothing. I don't say, oh my goodness, I'm back to New York. Just in time, okay, time for the most of my life, just in time, they come up. The launch was first fan flight, first ever international science fiction convention. I mean, international. It was America, England, Scotland, and two Welshmen. That's it. Say, and we flew the Atlantic. I was shocked to find a great big plane circling three tails. I was full capacity, just like the 747. There were, how many days? 73 people? 37 people? 75. 55. They saw the plane moving. Propellers. 24 hours. New York to London. Germany saw a bit of tailwind. We didn't have to stop again before we were at the landing. We were in South again, and I shank. And then we carried passengers of food. They fed us on the ground in New York with foreign sailors. And that is the ground in London, North Airport. And in between, Coca-Cola and Sweeties, and for entertainment, both festivals. We had Ozzy Drake and Sam Muscle for entertainment. Last minute, Ozzy got to say, August 1934, astounding. Sam was like, covered by Paul, first story body. I'm closing everyone who everything was in that situation. We were out of line. And we landed in London, which was something else again. No one in that plane, but I mean, the world of the military doesn't count. Every time in the United States is for it. People come and mix it in Jamaica, things like this. And we didn't lose our respect. One of the things in the heat rate of Europe, 110 in the West. And we came into London, clouds were appearing. We came down, layer after layer of cloud, and rainstorm. And we rolled through, playing the main side. What the hell is that motorcycle? The hell, the world going on? God, what country is it? Oh, we found out very fast. So this for me, it's a song that's 26 hours, it's a time. And we went into the West. I'm still forgetting the
first English meal of paradise. Oh, chocolate city of Britain. From Tanger, I'll sit down, born with this. 43 pieces of silver, every plate. When I'm in the night before, rich on that day, 12 legs, 13-4, skinny guys and spoons. And the fool kid, you look up here, the way you're doing the tuxedo. Oh, I pray now. He's pushing up, stewarding still the serving trolley. Don't let it. Oh, wow. This is really food. It's a food toilet. Both of you are British, but this is Britain. Need no more. The other guys, they say, that there was meat at some time, I think it was sure, or was chairs at the time, I'm sure. And with all the 17 lives we had, it's impossible to get peace of it anyway. And there was cabbage, which had been boiled for about 37 hours. And left to cool, the grease was boiled. So there were peas, and these peas could fire on a gun on the side. We had a lot of peas, but your teeth break. Fantastic. We saved a couple of months with a two-color, with a piece of margin for a clean air. It was hard as I even from Harry Magazine. England, the rumor is untrue. The British think that you're warm. Not true. The British think that you're room temperature. The British room temperature is now in the refrigerator. Yeah, it's nice to be rich at anytime. It's pretty hard to prove that we were very poor. We found a penny, the same size as sugar in the gas, in the gas bottle. Sugar, it's not right. Fire with Zoom, right? One line, we drink, I have five cups. Please, that's 6 cents? Come on. But the fox didn't mind, we had another. An old friend of ours in the world, Gary Davis, world system number one, was coming daily. Slugging something. World Master, which I designed. Half the English has gone. It's a prisoner of hunger. And his friend said, so we got on the train and left England and went to Italy. Happy. We said, yeah, a lot of stuff can happen there. Some repeal. And we're in the death row again. We're in the death row. And getting out a few short stories. And then my agent failed, but I had a really rotten agent. Hold out the dead and die in pain. I think he's still alive. And the morning you argue about it, 15, 20 years later, then you thought, Harry, Harry, you're a big city horse. And what's the story? So I went back to that. I wrote it. And I shut down the label, it's on the Brazilians do. You don't like it. And you take your photograph, your photograph, and meditate on it, and focus it. Message hard messenger. I got to work with a lot of nations in North America. I got to New York working in Death Row. And I sent about 3 words to Tony Angle. He said, Robin Knight, my name, my cliche, I'm a whole of them. You're like 2 years, and I'm like, I can't think. And then Southern America was with an agent. I finished up Death Row, sent it on to him. And waiting on 3 days, back in the mail, a letter of rejection, something like that. In front of the manuscript, a letter of rejection. I then found and discovered that John Gamble had a very simple way of communicating with writers, and he's very sick. There was no letter, nothing at all there, but a check for $2,100. Oh, that's a message. I earned $3,000 more than we did before. I got the message. My profound discovery. When we invested all the money, I know we're going to go. They're just going to go a long way. No, it's a value of $700. You lost already? No, I for one day, it's Denmark. Such a part. And you may ask, what like Denmark? And it's a good question. And usually, at this point, I say, it seems like a good idea at the time. That's what you usually an answer to it. But in the world of arts and letters, there is communication with artists, and they help each other.
in many ways, other than Mary Church Rice, the initial chapter. But in Mexico, this is a time of the street today, and I heard a man talking French to the Spaniard. So the beginning of the time, I saw a number of French. And I asked him, do you speak English? He spoke perfect. He was perfect. English, Italian, German, Swedish, but he didn't speak Spanish. Cargo pants, I told him, I can't fix it. Move the next one. He was our director, she was kidding. Woman's not going to take a new one. And while we're traveling around the world, like, we're talking with women and the other parts about traveling, children, and cooking Mexican food. And when we go back to Denmark, we're tired of superintendent of a free tail that killed 55 people with Zymoski, you know. Shouldn't ask too much. Once in a while, the only non-stop party goes back to Europe, and go underwater and stuff, and go by the way, and was SAS. And I got like four tickets on it, I was leaving here a room for a while. I had a little building which was over here next to me, and it sort of shipped over from $100 price of it, different ones later. For sure. We went there, and the old room, as the old room holds up to remember, so somebody that was born that year, 1959. And that day, there was something I was going to name. Years later, we've been there, and about 3 months, you know, we're finally going away again. We could pull it together, picture the sun in front of me, and it's just the sun looks like it. And they were very fun. The sun came out in May, and it shined May, June, July, August, September, October, November, and it was beautiful. Wow, the whole big one. And it's beautiful. It's paradise. We'll stay at Denmark, we're going to be in there. The winter came finally out. But I want to mention the Scandinavian weather. In Botanic Cave, right across the Botanical Park and Museum, there are five sub-bases in it. And a bulb sprouted. You can't sound interested, do you? If you can't bring up the bulb to sprout in the lower basin, because that bulb was brought back by the natives. Made that land, you know. And that's quite a few years ago. And we stayed on, and started writing books. And we're going to learn. And meaning all friends. And I'm sure the people will talk to you about science fiction. It's there. We get a car drives in there. Oh, science fiction. Across the United States, I'll get the other one. Oh, science fiction. And met my boss at the convention. And we both agreed on certain literary things about books. We organized a science fiction first. I have a little magazine for big criticism. And I'm sorry how we did it. You know, we're going to use some blank science fiction that's in there. It's a little right out. And we buy a whole lot of it. It's on a massive. Everything in the issue is printed on a massive free paper by an academic press in the United States. Both issues.
Very happy, very happy. Now I'm happy. Now, running is like pain. You start paying.
very set amount of a local superintendent, and it's very exciting, I really feel the most of doing something right. I'm sure it was the same, I'm fascinated. And thank you very much for having done it, and for coming in and saying, thank you.